This is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Okay, Boston. I hardly know where to start, but before, you know, maybe before I do that, just a way to sort of warm up my larynx and my brain here. If you are new to this show, or you're tuning in from Sirius, because I mentioned this on Sirius XM, so if you're just listening to the show for the first time, you might want to go also and regularly check out essays I write and responses I get from listeners and people who go to the Facebook page for Occupied Territory America. Facebook page is just called Occupied Territory on Facebook. So go there and check out things I write there, and you can feel free to respond and to disagree or agree, whatever you want to do. So every day people, you know, check their favorite blogs or websites or television stations or radio stations to find out, or newspapers, to find out what the latest developments are up in Boston. And I guess we could get into that later. Purely by accident, by the way, if you do have access to Sirius XM radio, about 3 weeks ago, I got a book. I get a lot of, you know, books from reviewers, review copies rather, from publicists and publishers. One of the books was a memoir of an ex-Air Force bomb disposal captain over in Iraq. His experiences, which were shattering, literally and figuratively, and how he could never adjust to being at home, and maybe is just beginning to adjust after many years. But he did two tours of duty in Iraq, in charge of a unit that disposed of bombs and then also picked up after dozens and dozens of horrible explosions to examine what the bombs were, what they were like, so they could learn more about them and try to avoid them in the future. They also went out on patrols because there were reports of bombs, and if they found one, they had to disable it. They used robots. There's been some movies about this, or documentaries, too. In fact, I think there was a movie called The Hurt Locker, right, a couple of years ago, which won an Academy Award, did it? I don't know. It was about these events, and they go out, and they send a robot. You know, they stay, you know, safe enough, or hopefully enough, behind their Humvee or a wall or someplace, and send a robot out to disable these IEDs and other bombs that are rigged. Anyhow, this guy's coming on Saturday. He'll be on Saturday at XM, Sirius XM Left 127 at 5 p.m. Eastern. This is mentioned on the Facebook page, Occupied Territory. So maybe let's talk about some responses. We all had our responses. The first response you have is, if you're a regular person, I have no idea what goes on in the minds of people who run the military, run government, you know, people who are pundits and columnists. They don't seem to think the way regular people like you and me think. But the first reaction is, like, for instance, in 9/11, when I was living here in this city and it affected me personally, my son was four blocks at a high school, four blocks away from those two towers. Everything covered, and he came home. When he got home, finally, after 2 hours of walking all the way uptown to where I live, it was he was covered in dust, and God knows what was in that dust, right? So, and he heard the noise. He looked out, and he saw things at the top of the tower, which he hasn't actually spoken of completely to this day. And so, you know, and then you live in the city. When that happened on 9/11, you could smell the smell. I mean, I live like several miles. Maybe it's about 5 miles or more. Maybe 5 miles or more. Maybe 6 miles away from the site of where the towers were, where I live in Manhattan. And you could still smell it. And the wind changed a couple of times, and you could smell it during the day, that special, horrible smell. A radio station, BAI, where I worked, was maybe 7-8 blocks away from the blast, you know, from the explosion, from the attacks. And the station was uninhabitable. First of all, they blocked the whole street off. It was Wall Street. And you couldn't really use the place. When we came to this, it had to be a tremendous cleanup, and it smelled for months afterwards of plastic, explosive materials, who knows? And of course, you know, the remains, what was left of human beings. And it was really awful. And then I knew people. There was a guy on my block who lost his wife who worked there, high up in the building. And this guy got in his 30s, who was left with two little kids, and his wife worked there. You know, and not everybody you knew in one way or another was affected by it in the city. But in an instance like this, if you're not there, and I guess this may be whoever's listening to me now who wasn't in New York when that happened, and that's maybe, I don't know, most of you, certainly more than three quarters of you who are listening, you have a different reaction depending on how close you are to, it's almost like a correspondence metaphorically, spiritually, and emotionally to the actual physics of it. In other words, the closer you are to the blast, the more your body feels it. The further and the more and the louder the sound is, the more it affects your bodily organs, maybe your brain cells. If you're really close to the blast, it could actually, as you see in Boston, cause, you know, horrible physical damage, death. The further you're away from it, like I didn't hear a sound. I mean, you know, I was outside when those planes hit the towers. You don't hear anything. You're 6 miles away. And there's all sorts of buildings in between. I didn't hear anything. So the further you're away physically from something, the less damage is inflicted on you, unless, of course, you happen to be horribly unlucky and a relative or a friend was actually at the spot up in Boston when the bombs went off, particularly that one bomb. And so the further you are away, you know, the less violent the disturbance. And if you're far enough away, in another city, in another state somewhere, your reaction tends to be, it's primitive and it's gut-like, but it's emotional and it's a spiritual reaction. The first thing you feel, it's not a physical reaction, obviously. And the first thing you do is you feel, the closer you are to it, the first thing you do is you feel fear, even if it's completely irrational fear. When I heard about this, what happened in Boston, you feel this fear go through you. Now, it's somewhat enhanced if you live in New York City because of the attacks here. And I suppose the same is for people at the Pentagon, you know, who were around when the plane hit the Pentagon and, you know, other people who remember attacks. Anybody who was in Oklahoma City, who is related or had friends or knew people who worked with people who, I think it was 167 people were killed, blown up in those explosions of the federal building in Oklahoma City. I believe that was back in 95, but I'm not exactly sure. And, you know, you have a reaction if you're there, but the further are you away you are, but you do have that same feeling. You have an innate reaction, an instant reaction of fear. You get this fear, right? Does it sound familiar? You get fear when you read about that. I heard about the Boston thing where you see it on TV, you read it, you hear it, you see a headline. You have tremendous fear as soon as you hear it. And and you don't think to yourself so much as, or maybe you think, but the reaction is, are my kids safe? You know, like you know rationally, let's say that your kids or your parents or your husband or your wife or your friends or your relatives, nobody lives in Boston, maybe, right? Now, I happen to actually have a nephew who lives in Boston, and I have two friends who just moved up there about a year ago, and I don't know, you know, and they're runners. But I didn't think of them right away. But the first reaction you have is, even if you know in your conscious, rational mind that there's nobody you know there, the first thing is, I hope everybody's safe, right? That feeling you get, like for instance, if you're walking along and you see fire engines, you know, screaming past you and you're walking along. Now, maybe because I'm a selfish individual or I only think of my own survival or of my family's, but I don't know how different I am than other people. I think to myself, as soon as the fire engine, I see it's going in a different direction than my building or where my wife works, or where my you know, where my daughter works. If I see it's going in a different direction, or if it passes by my building, I'm still upset about it for whoever is suffering from this, and the whole thing is upsetting, but not as much. So your first reaction, I think, is self-survival. Expand it out to your friends, your family, anybody you might have worked with, somebody you might know. Right? Is everybody safe? You worry about that. Then there's successive reactions after that. Then the next reaction will be kind of there's a lull after fear. And then there's anger, which often occurs right after that. Anger, even rage, and usually infinite anger and rage, because it's already happened. it couldn't, you didn't stop it. Nobody stopped it. It already happened, right? So there's no mystery involved. It's a horrible thing. Nobody could do anything about it. And everybody was helpless. And you feel helpless. And then people who feel scared and helpless, and this happens to everyone to some degree, no matter what the situation, if you feel scared and helpless, you're probably going to feel angry after that. And often people will feel depressed, depending on their personality, you know, that the impotence will make you feel just that helplessness and impotence. You know, these people get blown up and like and the towers went down, people in the planes hit, people die. You feel a sense of powerlessness, and you feel just like an ant trying to avoid being stepped on by gigantic people walking around, forces bigger than you, right? So, and then a lot of people feel rage, and it's expressed in different ways. Everything from the most superficial and stupid, which is to say the patriotic, as far as I'm concerned, instantly, you know, if you want to see, sometimes I feel like it's a level of intelligence, like an intelligence test. The first reaction of people, if it's to wave a flag and yell about them versus us, or we're okay and America can overcome this, which, by the way, is the reaction of most politicians, at least publicly, and the stuffiest and the most pompous of pundits and writers. Like, for instance, the worst guy I know is Thomas Friedman, who is a reporter for The New York Times. If there is a bigger pompous asshole in journalism, I don't know who it could be. I don't know who it could be. And of course, the first reaction, you know, like Bush and even Obama is, we will find these people and they will pay for what they did. And the implication is, if it isn't stated outright, is they messed with America. It's like a bad spaghetti Western, you know, or a bad 80s or a 90s movie. They hit him where he lived. They messed with him. They didn't know who they were fooling with, you know, because it's us, right? We're more democratic. We're more open-hearted. We're more friendly and generous. We're bigger than anybody else. I mean, how could they hurt us? Why would they attack us? Poor little us. Well, it's not poor little us. You know, genuinely honest, straightforward. We're all honest Abe here, right? We're the home of democracy. Why would they attack us? You know, we believe in freedom and liberty. Why would they attack us? So the first reaction, the anger is expressed in all sorts of ways. And like I say, it's everything from the lowest level, the most stupid, the most unthinking, the most irrational, and the lowest level, which, of course, is one of the reasons why there is violence in the world. The endless cycle of violence is to wave a flag and to say, you know, USA, USA, we'll get them. In other words, to line up, to draw a line in the sand, there's no end to it. Here's what did the president say the other day? I don't listen to him anymore at all. The guy makes me sick to look at him or to listen to him. Anyhow, apparently he said, according to a report here, or part of what he said was, and we will find out who did this. We'll find out why they did this. Why? Any responsible individuals, any responsible groups will feel the full weight of justice. In other words, his first response is, they screwed with us and we're going to kill them. We're going to find them and we're going to kill them. Great. That's great. You know, and that's a natural response from a lot of people. If you had anything, if it was your family or your friends up there, or somebody you knew, or somebody you had worked with for a long time, it was something really personal, right? Or, you know, even if it happened, something happened to you, if you were up there, your response might be, and far more justifiably, in my opinion, a more righteous response is, I'm going to find out who did this, and I'm going to kill them. I'm going to torture them, or I'm going to shoot them in the head, or I'm going to beat them to death with a baseball bat. I'm not an absolute believer I believe in capital punishment. There are times, I think, depending on the circumstances. Now, I know some people are absolutely dead set against it, use a certain phrase, and some people favor it. But I'm one of those people who feels that once in a while there is a justification for capital punishment. And to me, everything is personal, right? If somebody did anything to my kids or to my wife, I would like to skip the whole process of indictment and trial. If I saw them do it or I knew they did it for sure, just hand me a baseball bat or, you know, a gun, and I'll take care of the problem myself. Now, so a lot of people's reactions is, and I don't know if there's a difference between men and women. I really don't. it's something interesting to talk about, right? But the first response I would have, and a lot of people I know, is if it happened to somebody who was that close to them, and you could see there's so many cultural expressions of this in the movies and novels, you know, in speeches that people make. You want to do something about it personally. You want to get revenge. Revenge is a powerful thing in human nature. You want to get revenge. But the first response from somebody like the president of the United States, or here's this guy Friedman, who was writing the other day. And of course, you get, this is the kind of thing is, you get a writer named Dennis Lehane, who is a famous, an extremely good, famous mystery writer. Dennis Lehane, Mystic River, all those kinds of, he wrote lots of novels. And it says here, messing with the wrong city. And he doesn't mean that in a stupid, like, you know, wave the flag, shoot them way. He means that Bostonians can rise above anything. They're tough, you know, and it goes into the whole history of the city and that kind of thing. So it's an op-ed piece here, messing with the wrong city. In other words, we'll beat this. You know, like it's like those ads on TV. I'm free associating. What else do I do? On TV where it says, there's a kid there, like some kid or somebody that says, cancer, you messed with the wrong guy. It's the whole attitude of life as a war, as a battle, as you triumphing over, you know, rough terrain. You know, America has this attitude that it triumphed over the West, winning the West. As if it was a war or a competition to the death and we won. We won the West. Yeah, I guess so, in the course of destroying the land, a lot of it, and murdering, what, a couple of million Indians who lived there? We're displacing them or murdering them just outright or killing them off. The whole idea of winning and losing, the whole idea of good and bad, the whole idea of extreme division between you and other people, other religions, the land itself, this division between you and other people. What does Friedman say here? He says, bring on the next marathon. It makes you cringe when you read stuff like that. It makes me cringe. Thomas Friedman, who does not live in Boston, I don't know where he comes from, right? He says, bring on the next marathon. And he goes, blah, 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 blah here. You know, we'll rise above it. We're strong. Americans are strong. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Very strong. Which is why we're number 40 in education, 50 in, you know, in number 5 in infant death in the industrialized world. I mean, you know, that kind of, yeah, we're really strong here. We have the moral backbone of, you know, decapitated rabbits in this country, right? But we're really strong. Okay, this is what he says. Let's see. Fear. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. This can pose a much greater threat to our open society than the Soviet Red Army ever did, if we let it. Because this kind of terrorism attacks the essential thing that keeps an open society open. Trust. Trust is built into every aspect, every building, every interaction, and every marathon in our open society. Terrorists can steal it for a moment or even for a while, but we dare not let them fundamentally erode it. And I don't think we will. When you watch the video of the bombing aftermath, notice how many people you see running toward the blast within seconds to help, even though more bombs easily could have been set to explode there. In other words, we don't frighten. The whole thing is we don't frighten easily anymore. Really, Tom? What stinking, stupid, pompous, you know, brain-dead world do you live in? You're not scared? You should be, you idiot. We should all be scared, right? What? This guy makes like $500,000 a year giving lectures, writing for the Times, writing books. Did you ever see this guy? He appears on Channel 13 sometimes. He's got a little bow tie. He is so full of himself and stuffy and pompous. It's as if he's in a little plastic room talking to himself when he talks. He has no idea what's going on in the world or how people actually feel. He's very smart, by the way, this guy, without making a whole analysis of Thomas Friedman. He's a really smart guy. You know, he really can explain some very abstract and interesting ideas about human nature, and he's got some things to say sometimes. But it's that attitude, you know, we're better than this. We'll beat them. We'll beat those terrorists. No, you can't beat the terrorists. Because you don't understand that the whole concept of beating them is part of the problem. It's why there are terrorists. It's why they are terrorists. And it's all men. What is wrong with men? I ask, being a man, what is the problem? If and when they find these people, I could say these guys, you know, it wasn't women who did this. It wasn't women who blew up the Oklahoma City. Like, for instance, if the FBI is ever looking for somebody who committed a mass murder in this country or a serial killer or blew something up, they could cross off half the population right away and not worry about them. It won't probably and will never be a woman. In fact, it's always a man. Why is that? Why is that? I'm sure there's about 5,000 books written to explain this, right? And professors who could come on and explain it neurobiologically, culturally, the way men and women changed and developed over the millennia. I don't know. But there is, I remember when George Bush came on and he was talking about catching Osama bin Laden. And you listened to all the speeches of Osama bin Laden and you thought about the way George Bush acted and the way he was. And you think of Cheney. Cheney and Bush were perfect mirror images of Osama bin Laden. If you just think of it as one coin and you flip it up in the air and it hits, and you catch it in your palm, one time it'll be Dick Cheney's face on it, Dick Cheney running the government, not George Bush. Let's say Dick Cheney and George Bush on one side. And sometimes it'll flip over and hit in your hand after you flip it up in the air, the coin, and it'll be Osama bin Laden. These people are mirror images of each other. They are hard-on, fanatic, ignorant men who understand only power, violence, and competition. That's all they understand. And the rest of us, because they're in charge, and because in this country we allow them to be in charge, and that's our responsibility, have to suffer for their behavior. We have to suffer for their behavior. Because these lunatics and these zealots, these fanatics, and I include Cheney, Bush, and Osama bin Laden at the same in the same breath, they are the same people. And they're like the filaments, that red hot filaments in a toaster. We're the toast, unless of course we manage to exercise our ability in what remains of this free society to not keep electing these people, not to allow them to have any power. And yet it seems to be worse all the time. So the president says we will track these people down, and they will feel the full weight of justice. Yeah, okay, and that'll solve the problem, right? Of course it won't. The people in Iraq and in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Somalia, you know, a lot of them really bad guys, people who want to harm the United States of America, at least according to the government, and maybe they're right. They feel the full weight of our justice. Unfortunately, so do their women and children and older relatives. We have killed several hundred, almost to 1,000 people in drone strikes who had nothing to do with any violence whatsoever. They were merely in the wrong place at the wrong time. No more than a week or two ago, a drone strike killed, no, I'm sorry, an Air Force strike called in to help troops who were in trouble in some province in Afghanistan, attacked a house where a main Taliban leader, a local Taliban leader, was supposed to live. Killed him, I think they killed him, but I'm not sure if they got him, and one or two other people who were, you know, aides of his, and 10 children, and critically injured 5 women. They murdered 10 children. And you know, and I know, that they knew that those kids were in that house. They killed them anyhow. For years and years and years now, for almost, what, 10, 12, 13 years in both of these countries, the United States has lobbed hundreds of thousands of artillery shells, rockets, drone missile strikes, cruise missile strikes, unloosed uranium, depleted uranium-tipped artillery shells, and maybe a couple of million rounds of ammunition, or 10 trillion rounds of ammunition in these countries. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people have had their houses blown up, they have had their limbs blown off, had their lives extinguished, children, women. Totally civilian, innocent people have been murdered by the United States out of the blue, you know, or doors kicked in, people terrorized, so people have been raped, people have been insulted at the very least, their whole culture derided by the Americans riding through their country in these monstrous machines or just attacking them from the sky. There is something in the world called karma, and I've talked about this before plenty of times. The old-fashioned way of saying it is, what goes around comes around. Now, I hope, but of course I'm sure I'm wrong, unfortunately, I hope that when they find the people who did this, it turns out to be a bunch of redneck, crew-cut, white, brain-dead militia types, fundamentalist Christians or white militia anti-tax fanatics or whoever they are, right? I would prefer it if it was them, because it would be less of an excuse for our corporate police state government, which was formerly somewhat of a democracy, to take away more of the Constitution and more of our rights, to spy on us even more, to unleash militarized police with laser sound blast weapons and batons and pepper spray and bullets and rubber bullets to shoot people and to club people and to spray people in the face who are merely going out nonviolently to express their anger and their outrage at the fact that our government is owned by the rich and operates for the rich. When you go out on the street and protest the very thing, one of the very things that is the foundation of the trouble in the world, one of the reasons, you know, they've studied this for decades and decades now, for 100 years and more now. It's been going on. The people have been paying attention to this. Finally, you know, academic studies or actual research studies, people investigating the reality of things. Poverty breeds crime. Poverty breeds crime. And I mean the kind of crime that we, you know, we're talking about here. I mean violent crime, muggings, stabbings, murders, thefts, robberies. The kind of the real crime in the world is what creates the poverty. It's income inequality. But that's too abstract a term. When you have a handful of people, when you have 10 people in this country who have in their possession or every year money that adds up to or property or things that they own or shares of stock, when you have, you could pick 10 people in this country who have $200 billion between them. 10 people have $200 billion. And there are people in this country, millions of people in this country, who are being laid off, who can't pay their mortgages so they get evicted from their houses, who can't pay their rent so they get evicted from their apartments, who live in shelters, people who live in under tarps, under railroad bridges and near tunnels. There are people who don't have enough to eat. There are tens of millions of people who have to live on food stamps just to provide enough food for themselves and their families. The average income in this country for people who can work hard like dogs all day long and then be asked to work late and can't say a word about it is $48,500. The average income has dropped almost $10,000 from about 20 or 30 years ago. And the prices have gone up 10 to 20% since 10 or 20 years ago. So at the same time that prices for everything have gone up, the average income in this country, which is supposed to provide for a mortgage, rent, utilities, electricity, gasoline, if necessary, to run the car, to buy a car, food, clothing, the basics for life in this country, all of these things are unaffordable now, expanded for millions and tens of millions of people. Most people have to work sometimes two jobs or work extra for less money just to get by on things that are going up in price all the time. Who is responsible for this? Not the people who work like dogs and try to do the right thing and don't steal from other people and don't cheat and don't try to manipulate stock markets. It's the people at the top, the bankers and the people in charge of the government. It's income inequality. When you have so many people at the top, and I'm talking so many in one particular way, when you have dozens and dozens and dozens, when you have, let's say, a couple of thousand people at the top of our society who have several hundred billion dollars, which if you just liquidated, pardon the expression, the assets, if not the people themselves, but no, that's not right. If you actually liquidated the assets of the richest 1,000 people in this country, just sold everything they had, right? Everything that they were going to earn last year, everything they and took everything that they earned, everything they have in the bank, sold their property, sold their stock, sold their bonuses, sold everything they had, their jewelry, their paintings, their yachts. If you sold all this crap, all of which they don't need, you would have enough money to actually hire back every laid off teacher, librarian, fireman, cop, everybody in the country. You'd have enough money to stimulate millions of jobs. You'd be able to repair bridges and roads. You would be able to plug the entire hole in the whole goddamn budget. if you just took away what 1,000 people, rich people, have in this country, you made them pay their taxes, if you got their money back from offshore accounts, if you made corporations pay their taxes. The reason why am I going on about this? First of all, this show is called Occupied Territory America. It's about the goal of the Occupy movement, which is to try to rebalance the income distribution in this country. If you work hard to provide something, an essential service, or even if you just work hard at a job, you're delivering Coca-Cola, you know, in a truck to a bunch of stores in New York City, right? Now, nobody needs Coca-Cola. In fact, it's not very good for you, right? But you work hard all day long. You hump these big, heavy boxes of bottles, empties, and then full ones. If you collect garbage, if you're teaching children, you make $40,000, $50,000 a year doing this, and you work like a dog. You break your back almost literally doing this. You stand on your feet. You serve other people. Think of the millions of jobs. Waiters, everybody, bus drivers, people who work in stores behind counters, people who serve you in stores, serve, right? People who work in drug stores and get paid $7, $8, $9 an hour. People who work in McDonald's. All of these people are working hard, working their lives away and not making enough to even live on in a decent way in this country. Because the prices of everything are allowed to go up. They don't have to. We as a people could put caps on the price of gas, caps on the price of electricity. We could put caps on mortgage payments, caps on rents. We could reduce these things too. It doesn't have to cost as much because it's making people who are already rich, richer. This is the way it works. And then you'll tell me, well, what about all the pension funds and the fact that regular people have all their money invested in 401 this and 403Bs and Ls and Ds and their pension funds, the teachers' pension funds. Pension funds have no business investing in the stock market or certly in hedge funds, which they do. Teachers' pension funds invest in risky casino-like hedge funds. Why? They shouldn't be allowed to. But we would be able to maintain, if we took away, let's say, what belonged to the top, make it more realistic, take the top 10,000 people in this country. If we made them pay their taxes, took away everything they owned and left them with plenty just to live on for themselves and their families so they could have a decent life, right? A house, a couple of cars if they need two, rooms for each of their kids to live in, enough clothes to look okay and to feel warm in the winter, you know, maybe an air conditioner if they need it. Yeah, give them what most regular people have. Everything they have on top of it, take away from them. Forget about it. You know, they don't need any of this, right? They don't need it. Mayor Bloomberg, the mayor of New York City, who wants to cut and in fact has tried and will successfully cut senior center funding, so that people won't have enough meals to eat, they won't have people to visit, they won't have any place to go to socialize, and they'll die of even more loneliness than they have already, and who wants to cut library service in New York all the time, where people can go and get a free education and read books. This son of a bitch, who has $23 or $25 billion, he could pay for all of this with the money he has. Nobody has to be laid off. A library doesn't have to be closed, you know? Doesn't have to be. Firehouses don't have to be closed. Police precincts don't have to be closed. Teachers and everybody's salary, the cops, the firemen, people who risk their lives for other people, people who empty garbage, you know, and keep our streets clean and then we don't get the goddamn plague. These people are making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year. They have families. You know what it means to try to live on that. Why am I making a big deal about this? Because this is one of the reasons, if you expand it worldwide, there are billions of people in this world who literally are starving to death or have no place to live or just get by on a few dollars a day for the labor they do, making most of the stuff that we have in this country. And America is behind too much of this. Too much of this. We send gunboats out, navies, air forces, occupation forces for the last couple of hundred years internally. We destroyed an entire culture in this country. We must have killed 10 million different people in this country called Indians. We stole this country. We built it on the backs of slaves. And we export this kind of arrogant, violent, childish behavior all over the world. We corrupt governments. We assassinate democratically elected leaders. We bribe people in other countries so that our corporations can steal their resources and pollute their whole countries. And we give money to dictatorships overseas and to the worst kinds of people who torture their own people. And I won't make the list because it's too long. We do this. People know this. And then if something happens in this country where there's a terror attack, if something happens in this country where there's a terror attack, and when they find these guys, and I assume it's guys, of course, they will probably, sadly and unfortunately, and I'm not saying it for these guys, whoever did this, I don't care. You know, I have no brief for these people. Anybody who was going to blow anybody up, and in Afghanistan and Iraq and in Pakistan and other places where people go and blow up their own people, how sick does it get? Where you blow up your own people, children, you blow up a market, a school, a mosque. You blow up totally innocent people. To make what point? To make what point? The people who do this kind of thing are, and don't, you know, don't even get me started on religions. Okay, I just started myself. If we could instantly, magically get rid of all the world's religions, and I'm not including Buddhism and Taoism, by the way, because they're not, you know, organized religions like that, at least in most places in the world. Some places they aren't. It's not a good thing. If we could get rid of all organized religions, every holy book that people are forced to read and are brought up by, and or maybe let's excerpt the wisdom out of most of these holy books, and there is wisdom in all of them. But if we could get rid of all organized religions, and we could immediately put big rolls of masking tape around the mouths of about 90% of the quote-unquote holy men in the world, and it's always men, if we could get rid of the Catholic Church and everybody in it and just leave the priests who actually do preach love and, you know, communal help for other people, who preach what Jesus preached in the first place. If we could get rid of all of these organized religions and shut 90% of these nasty, women-hating, humanity-hating, life-hating old men and young men, if we could just put them in a can somewhere and ship them to the desert and bury them under a salt dome, we would all be better off. It's these men who propagate this patriarchal religion that has destroyed the lives of tens of millions of people in history, hundreds of millions of people, perverted societies, ruined democracies. In Latin America, especially, and in many other places, the Catholic Church completely cooperated with and facilitated slavery, beatings, tortures, you name it. They were hand in glove with these people. The Catholic Church throughout the history of Europe and in Latin America and Central America and Mexico and other places, the Catholic Church has always been there when there is brutal conquest, when there is slavery, especially in South America, and when there are, quote-unquote, sort of noble or oligarchical families that own and run these countries and torture people, police states, dictatorships. The church is right in there with them. It was in Europe for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. Same thing. A prince of the church, a prince of the country. Same thing. And they own palaces and gold rings and robes and everything. Take away everything the Vatican has. Take every last cent away from those cracked brain, old, stuffy, sterile, women-hating, gay-hating, child-molesting assholes. Take it all away from them. Take Bloomberg's money away from them. Take the Koch brothers' money away from them. Take the Waltons' money away from them, Walmart money. Take all this money away from these hedge fund people. They don't need it. We are all drowning here in this world. And the thing that the president doesn't understand, you know, and that the men who run this world and run major religions and corporations and make these wars, the generals and the weapons makers, the thing they don't understand is that we are all the same. That's why you're scared. That's why you're afraid. That's why you get that instant surging, gripping fear when you read about what happened in Boston. Because we're all together. That's the reason you're really afraid. Because when someone else gets their leg blown off, you're getting your leg blown off. When someone else gets killed, you got killed. I might say you almost had your leg blown off or you almost got killed. Or it shows you that you could get your leg blown off or you could get killed. I'm saying something different here. I'm saying when the towers got hit or when a drone missile hits a picnic or a funeral party or a wedding party in Afghanistan and 50 innocent people get blown to bits, little children, women, wives, husbands, old men, old women. When that happens, you get blown to bits. When are people going to finally understand this? The first thing this asshole president does is stand up and says, we'll bring them to judgment. Is he the Marshal of Dodge City? Is it 1872 and the Wild West? When are people going to evolve beyond this? They got us, we'll get them. In Sicily, at a certain point, I don't know when it was, around 1900, 1920, 1930, there were 10 women for every man. The men had all succeeded in almost murdering all of themselves off in vendettas. What is these wars between us and these terrorists and them and us, but money-inspired, money-inspired, religion-inspired, power-mad inspired vendettas between men who are blowing each other up, and the rest of us in the process? Hitler, Churchill, all of them murdering everybody. And the United States, you know, there is such a thing in the world as karma. The old-fashioned phrase was, and it still exists here and there, what goes around comes around. It is the truest thing in human nature. It's the truest thing in the world. What you do and what you say will come back to you one way or another. It may not be obvious or evident to you. You may not even be conscious of it. May not even happen in your own lifetime, but sometimes it does. You go around being nasty and self-involved, other people will treat you that way. You may not care, but they will treat you that way. If you're arrogant, if you're selfish, if you run right over people, it will come back to you one way or another. It will come back to you. George Bush posed the question, you know, after the towers came down, it was a rhetorical question with him, right? Why do they hate us? He said. They hate our freedoms and our democracy. George Bush, the son of the former head of the CIA and the vice president of the United States, who owned oil wells and oil leases and oil property all over the world, hand in glove with the same Saudis who were probably behind this, right? They flew the Saudis out of the country when no other plane was flying after 9/11. The Saudis, the royal family in this country, were able to fly. The only plane besides the president's plane and a few Air Force planes that were flying around this country after 9/11 that were allowed to fly were Saudis being flown back to Saudi Arabia because they were friends of the Bushes. George Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush, who was a Connecticut congressman and who was rich and who was connected to other people, traded with the enemy, with the Nazis in World War II. This is where he comes from. And he says, a guy who has initiated drone strikes all over the world, who has backed corporations, who has perverted the Constitution, he says, they hate us because of our freedoms. What freedom is that, George? I mean, yeah, we still have freedom of speech. Listen to me talk. I don't know how long that'll last. What you're afraid of here is that they're going to use this as an excuse to further rip up and destroy what's left of the Constitution. That's what you have to be afraid of. Yes, the terrorists are scary people. And I think when they finally find them, as I was mentioning before, they will probably turn out to be Muslim or Arab. I'm guessing, right? I'm not, you know, don't say you heard it here because I'm just guessing. Sadly, I think they will be. And why do I say sadly? Because it will be even more of an excuse to keep on with this insane, murderous, illegal, unconstitutional, and in the end, karmically destructive war that the United States is conducting all over the world, everywhere. Every time Chevron tries to personally hire people and corrupt people to overthrow a government somewhere, like in Venezuela, every time, the Chevron company tries to pollute and steal the land of people in Nigeria and they have to sue in the world court and lose, every time an American corporation in league with the United States government and its armed forces, in league with the most corrupt people in other countries, takes away the resources of other countries so that it leaves people poor. Every time they do that, we are creating millions of terrorists. Why do people hate the United States? Let me count the ways. Do I hate the United States? No, I live here. I live here. I don't really hate where I live. I'm very sad about the United States and the way it acts. I was brought up on, you know, World War II, flag flying, Iwo Jima, you know, we saved the world for democracy. Yeah, well, maybe we did. But there's a whole lot more to our history than that. What goes around comes around. If you treat people all over the world just like you're treating them in the United States, as if they're scum, if they're less human, as if they don't deserve the same love and care and physical comfort that you're treating yourself to in your own country or even just part of your own country, you're going to pay for it. You have to pay for everything. You go out to go to breakfast, you pay for breakfast, right? You buy gas, you pay for it. You have an argument with your wife or your husband, you're going to pay for it. You say something stupid to your kid, you will pay for it. You do something to somebody, you're going to goddamn well pay for it. The United States has been taking a gigantic turd explosion on the whole world for 200 years. We have been raping and stealing and murdering and we have been corrupting and we have been assassinating and invading places all over the world. People who just wanted the same freedom that we allowed ourselves. We've been doing this for hundreds of years. In Haiti, in 1804, when they finally had a successful revolution against Napoleon, one of the greatest, most vicious dictators that ever lived, did we help out? No. What we did within a year or two was send American sailors and Marines over to Haiti to make sure that the people who had plantations were safe and that they could still enslave people down there. Every single Latin American expression in Mexico, in Central America especially, in the Caribbean, in South America, every expression of people trying to break free of the landed gentry, of the church, of the patriarchal bullshit that was dumped on them for centuries and centuries, along with Christ and everything else that was preached to them. Every time they tried to break free of that, you could count on the U.S. Marines showing up. Or the Air Force, or corporate mercenaries, or United States hired mercenaries to keep the bad people in government, to help people torture. We taught people, we teach people in this country. There are courses here taught by our military, our CAA, to other people on how to torture human beings in their own countries. We supply the arms and the ammunition. In Egypt, people are starving to death. They don't have enough food in Egypt. What did we just send last week over to Egypt, the United States? Did we send them food? We sent them 140,000 tear gas canisters for the government to use for riot control. Pick up a weapon in half the countries of the world, and you will see that it's manufactured by some of the United States. I don't care. Don't tell me about the Russians and the Chinese. Yeah, I know what they're like. They are as bad as we are in their own way. I am talking about a country we're responsible for because we live in it. They don't have a democracy. Russia is a mafia kingdom. China is a dictatorship where you can get killed or disappeared for 10 years if you say the wrong thing. In this country, we still have the hope or the possibility even of changing our government, and yet we never do. We'll vote for the lesser of two evils. This lesser of two evils stood up the other day after Boston and said, they will feel the full weight of our justice. We'll find them. You know what? If he's really going to look hard for who's responsible for who blew these people up in Boston, then all he has to do is look in the mirror. What goes around comes around. If you live a life of arrogance and privilege and violence and suppression and murdering other people and invading other countries, if you live a life where you fraternize with rich people at the expense of poor people, if you let rich people get away with murder and keeping all their money and having everybody else have none, then it's going to come around on you. There will be terrorism. The terrorists in the United States, people who blow up, those people who blew up those people in the Boston Marathon, I would like to strangle them. Anybody who murders women and children, you know, they don't deserve to live. I don't, you know, I do believe in capital punishment in some cases. If they find the guys who did that, I personally would kill them, you know? Now, I understand. So when the guy says the weight of justice, but there's a larger picture here. This will go on forever. This will go on forever. How many terrorists, insane, murderous, enraged people who will spend the rest of their life trying to blow us up, have we created by our behavior overseas? People in this country are so goddamn ignorant, they don't even know their own history, either here or overseas. They don't know that the land they're living on in Nebraska or Alabama or New York State was stolen from the Indians, usually at the expense of these people's deaths. They don't know that. Half the people in this country are living on land that was either worked by slaves or Chinese people who were treated like serfs brought here over here to make railroads. Half the whole South was built on slave labor. People have no conception of this. They think that their stupid SUV or their recreational vehicle or their flat screen TV or whatever the hell else they have that they don't necessarily have to have is something they earn by a gift of God or because of their democratic freedoms. No, it's built on murder, theft, slavery, and it's still going on all over the place. People have to learn. They have to wake up. So what is happening in this country? They cut school teachers in schools. So the possibility of even learning these basic facts of American history is not available for people. So what happens is these people in the Boston Marathon who got killed, who had their legs amputated, whose lives will never be the same, who will be miserable the rest of their lives, who will barely be able to survive and have a decent life. The people who did it, yes, they should be brought to justice. Yes, they will have to pay. But when does the United States get brought to justice? When do the rich and the powerful get brought to justice? When do the brutal dictators all over the world, when do the religious fanatics and the lunatics who control vast armies of crazy young men who don't know any better, when will they be brought to justice? The real terrorists, the real criminals, the real murderers are the people at the top who command armies, who run corporations, who perpetuate a culture where people hate each other and where some few people have everything and the rest of us have nothing. It can't go on like that. That is why you have violence. Poverty exists where there is hatred, where the crime exists, where there is poverty, and there is hatred that goes with it, and anger and rage. It always was, and it always will be. And there's something in human nature where people will follow bad people, where charisma in the biggest, loudest lunatics will draw millions of people to follow their waving banner, if it's German or American or Roman or whatever it is. People hopefully need to wake up. We're all in the same boat. When somebody gets blown up by a drone missile or a ball bearing in Boston, it's all the same thing. We're all dying. We need to turn our faces to the bad guys and get rid of them.
The birds, they sang at the break of day. Start again, I seem to hear them say. Do not dwell on what has passed away or what is yet to be. Yeah, the wars, they will be fought again. The holy dove, she will be caught again. Bought and sold and bought again. The dove is never free. Bell that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Signs and the signs were sent. The birth betrayed, the marriage spent. Yeah, the widowhood of every single government. Signs for all to see. I can't run no more. that lawless crowd, while the killers in high places say their prayers out loud. Now, but they summoned up a thundercloud, and they're gonna hear from me. That still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Song. You can strike up the march on your little broken drum. Every heart to love will come. But like a refugee, ring the bell that still can ring. The light gets in.